The Hidden Emotion Model. The hidden emotion model is very different from the cognitive model and the exposure model. It's based on the idea that niceness is the cause of all anxiety. In fact, I sometimes think of anxiety as the niceness disease. If you show me 100 people who are anxious, I'll show you 100 of the nicest people you ever met. When you're anxious, you're almost always avoiding a problem that's bothering you, but you're not aware of it. You push the problem out of conscious awareness because you want to be nice and don't want to rock the boat or upset anyone. The hidden problem isn't usually buried in the past, but something very obvious in the here and now. You may be upset with your boss or annoyed with a friend or family member. When you bring the hidden conflict or emotion to conscious awareness, you'll suddenly understand why you've been suffering from anxiety, fear, or panic. When you express the feelings that you've been bottling up, often your anxiety will disappear. During a cognitive therapy group at our university hospital in Philadelphia, I worked with an anxious patient named Brent who'd been admitted to the inpatient unit from the emergency room earlier that morning because he was convinced he was about to go berserk. Brent had never received any psychiatric treatment or struggled with any emotional problems in the past. He was happily married and taught biology at a local high school. He told me that he loved his work and spent nearly 60 hours a week teaching and preparing for classes. In fact, he proudly announced that the students had voted him Teacher of the Year every year for the past 5 years. More than anything in the world, Brent and his wife wanted to raise a family of their own. They'd been trying for years, but his wife never got pregnant. She was nearly 40, and they were concerned that time was running out. Finally, in desperation, they went to the fertility clinic at our hospital, hoping the doctors there would be able to help. While they were driving to her mother's home for a Christmas party, Brent's wife announced that she had a special Christmas present for him. The doctor had called her that morning to inform her that she was pregnant. Brent panicked and thought he was about to lose control of the car, so he pulled over to the side of the road and told his wife that he felt too shaky to drive. She was concerned about him and offered to drive the rest of the way to the party. After a while, Brent pulled himself together, but he still felt extremely anxious. 2 days after Christmas, Brent was still struggling with waves of anxiety and panic. He went to a fast food restaurant and ordered their special mega burrito to go. He explained that he didn't want any beans on the burrito and clearly said, "No beans, please," twice when placing the order because he hated beans. The man behind the counter barely spoke English, but seemed to understand. When Brent picked his burrito up, there was a different man at the cash register, so he said, "No beans, right?" The cashier nodded obligingly and spoke to the other man in Spanish. Then he said he understood about the beans and that they'd made this special burrito exactly the way he wanted. Brent paid the cashier, who handed him a bag with a mega burrito inside. When Brent got home, he sat down at the kitchen table with great anticipation. But when he opened the bag, he discovered a massive bean burrito inside. He became enraged and started to attack the burrito with his knife. He slashed it repeatedly, splattering it all over the kitchen table and walls. Brent was a big fan of forensic detective programs on television, such as Cold Case Files, and was familiar with the analysis of blood spatter patterns. When he saw the burrito innards spattered all over the wall, he suddenly thought, "My God, that looks like a blood spatter pattern. What if I'm a serial killer who's about to go on a murder rampage and start slashing people to death? Maybe I'm not fit to be a father. I think I'm about to explode." That night, he could hardly sleep as he tossed and turned and obsessed about being a murderer. He even imagined this headline in the morning paper: "Local burrito slasher goes on killing spree." The next morning, Brent told his wife he was cracking up and needed to be in a mental hospital in a straitjacket. she rushed him to the Stanford emergency room, where he was admitted to the locked psychiatric unit. Brent had no history of violence or aggression and seemed like a kindly, gentle fellow. He said he'd always wanted a child of his own, and now that his dream was finally coming true, he couldn't understand why he was having such bizarre and horrible thoughts. Why was this happening? Is there a hidden problem or feeling that Brent is sweeping under the rug? Think about the timing of his anxiety. What was going on at the moment he began to feel so panicky? His wife had just told him that she was pregnant. Is it possible that Brent has mixed feelings about being a father? And if so, why? After all, he says he loves children, and he's obviously very devoted to his students. Brent also told us that he's working 60 hours a week trying to be the best teacher he can possibly be. Does he feel overwhelmed by the idea of changing diapers and taking on all the new responsibilities that go along with fatherhood? Or, to put it differently, is he feeling ambivalent? On one hand, he's always wanted a child of his own, but now that he's presented with the reality of the situation, he's getting cold feet. He feels confused and unsure about how he's going to handle it. Who's going to change the diapers at 3 a.m.? I asked Brent if any of this made sense, and he said I was reading him like a book. He admitted that he did feel confused because he didn't know how he was going to keep up with everything once the baby arrived. However, he'd never expressed these feelings to his wife because he thought it wasn't normal to have negative feelings or doubts about being a father. He said he thought that a father was supposed to love his children and not feel the way he did. He was also afraid that his wife would be devastated if she found out that he felt confused, and he didn't want to upset her. You can see that Brent's fantasies are doing the talking for him. They project this message loud and clear. I'm not sure I'm suitable to be a father, and I have no idea how I'm going to manage everything once the baby arrives. In fact, the very thought of being a father is driving me nuts. Did Brent's feelings of panic mean that he didn't want to be a father, or that he'd be a danger to his child? Not at all. Brent loved his wife and desperately wanted a child. He simply needed to get his feelings off his chest. I wanted him to know that feelings of doubt were perfectly normal. So I turned to the other members of the group and asked how many of them had children. Almost every hand went up. Then I asked, "How many of you get frustrated or annoyed with your children at times?" Every hand went up. Then I said, "How many of you sometimes get so mad at your kids that you feel like killing them?" All the hands went up again, and everyone started to giggle. I told Brent that every parent feels that way at times, and that he and his wife might end up feeling a lot closer if they started to communicate with each other about all the new challenges they were facing and how they deal with them as a loving team. Brent's face lit up, and he said that he suddenly felt relieved, but was still concerned that his wife would be devastated if she learned about his doubts. I said he wouldn't know until he told her, but it would be surprising if she didn't also have some doubts from time to time. I told him that she probably wasn't nearly as fragile as he thought, and that talking to each other more openly actually might make their relationship more meaningful and rewarding. As it turned out, she wasn't at all disturbed to learn about his feelings. She said she was already aware that he was feeling tense and felt relieved that he was finally opening up. Brent suddenly began to feel excited about the pregnancy, and his anxiety disappeared completely. He was discharged that very afternoon and didn't spend even a single night in the hospital. So now you've learned about three powerful ways to defeat anxiety. Cognitive techniques will help you put the lie to the negative thoughts and attitudes that make you feel anxious and depressed. Exposure techniques will help you confront the monster that you've been avoiding. And the hidden emotion technique will help you pinpoint any hidden conflicts or emotion that you've been ignoring and sweeping under the rug. Which method should you use? All three approaches are invaluable, and I use them all with every single patient I treat. If I've learned anything in my work with individuals suffering from depression and anxiety, it's this. We're all different. You can never predict which method is going to work for someone, and there's no single technique that will work for everyone. It always takes some trial and error, but if you persist, you'll always find the technique that works for you.